My name's Ed Piskor.
I'm Jim Rugg.
Jim, today we're going to be talking about a classic independent comic by Charles Burns, Black Hole. First, a little business at hand.
My latest comic, Octobriana 1976, world's first blacklight comic, in stores everywhere, selling quickly, which is awesome.
Yes, sir.
And now it's available on Comixology.
Great.
Both the comic book in all three editions, that's one bundle, and also the process zine, which has been flying off of my web store. So if you're into Comixology, if that's where you get your books, now you can read Octobriana 1976.
Just to clarify, process zine is its own independent piece or included with the bundle?
Process zine's its own independent piece, 350 pages of every detail about the making of this book, scans of original art, basically going through all the drafts of writing this, producing this, and good response to that. So
great.
Both of those things are available now, both on my website and on Comixology.
Right now, serializing my comic Red Room on Patreon, patreon.com/EdPiskor, and issue one is going to be up there in total this coming Tuesday. So $3 will get you the complete archive. Been on the grind pretty hardcore. This is the latest page I drew
That's there. Amazing.
It's going to be a splash. And this is what we do during COVID times, man, when we're not playing on fucking the computer. When we're not editing videos. Look at that.
That's an awesome pick.
Look at that great stack. Anyhow, man, $3 get you the archive. That's for the early adopters. There'll be a print edition of Red Room in 2021. We're dotting the I's and crossing the T's as we speak, man. But task at hand, the great Black Hole comic by Charles Burns, man, first serialized in 12 amazing issues of comics, of must-see comics, event comics. Whenever one of these suckers would come out, you stop what you're doing, and you go across the street from the comic shop, get you a coffee or a tea, and read this baby.
I remember literally doing that, Ed.
Totally.
With you guys when we would meet up on New Comic Wednesdays. I can remember the last issue coming out and Mark Zingarelli being surprised that we were reading this. I guess we were too young for it or something in his mind. But this was one of the first black and white indie comics I got hold of. Mm. It started out at Kitchen Sink.
Yeah.
And I was probably buying like Xenozoic Tales or something, you know, through their catalog, through their mail order, and just whatever looked interesting. And so I picked up the first couple issues of this. And as we're going to see, no comic looks like this comic.
No.
I was, you know, trying to ink with brushes and stuff, and I got hold of this thing, and it completely warped my whole vision of what comics could look like. Like, this thing looked like it was coming out of a comic book machine, and
right.
I had never seen anything like it. Fell in love with it. It's a horror comic.
Yeah.
We're here in, you know, Halloween month, but that horror comic appealed to me. It felt like the movies that I was trying to find. It felt like the books I was trying to read. And there weren't a lot of great horror comics, new horror comics at the time. This stuff just really stood out and made a mark.
Look at our girl. Look at that great background we have.
It's beautiful, man. This comic is beautiful on top of beautiful, and it's great from the get-go.
We're going to opt to look through the completed graphic novel because the glossy pages just don't lend well to our lighting situation, man. So it's like a matte finish, you know, standard cut, almost archival newsprint on the graphic novel. We'll use that.
Word on production. So that glossy paper, I think it's really great for inking because the ink doesn't bleed at all. It's
right.
Razor sharp.
Yeah.
However, it was a mistake. That was not what Charles Burns wanted, apparently.
Oh, really?
But once the first issue came back, he wanted the book to look consistent, so he stuck with it. And then when we get to the collected edition, he gets a chance to revamp that. And so picks a different paper. Whenever I did Street Angel, we called the art director of the Black Hole book and we're like, what's the paper for this? Because that's the pinnacle. You know, if you're trying to reproduce sharp black lines on paper, Black Hole is your Bible.
Right. I think of a trinity of these 1990s anal retentive, super meticulous cartoonists. It would be Klaus, Chris Ware, Charles Burns. Those are the guys that come to mind when it comes to this, like, extremely rigorous, like, as you said, machine-created kind of comic book aesthetic. The difference between Burns and those guys, though, is I don't know Charles Burns, man, but there's a little psychedelia to his work, we'll say, that Klaus and Ware just don't have in their comics. Their stuff has a more rigid kind of aesthetic, more constipated, we'll say, man.
There's definitely a tonal difference, you know, and this story, you know, it's a coming of age story. It's about high school kids who an infection, you know, I don't know if it's just this town or if it's everywhere, but an infection is in this town, and it's basically an STD that's spread through the teenagers having sex. It's a very different subject matter than most of what Chris Ware and Dan Klaus are doing. I think a lot of their work is older, you know, something like Ghost World notwithstanding, but a lot of their work, it's adult characters. This is clearly rooted in high school kids.
Sure.
And everything that comes with that. You know, I would put it, my note says coming of age.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty hard coming of age story, but it's still in that situation of like these kids transitioning from that high school age and through, you know, whatever follows that.
Yeah, this is the young adult comic for Eddie P.
There you go.
And you talk about the bug, the disease that these kids get, and you think about it in the hands of like a lesser cartoonist, how goose chills bad the metaphor can be applied and all of that. This is handled extremely well.
Yeah, I found rereading it at this time even, of course, more disturbing, because what happens is a lot of these kids, once they get this, once they contract it, some of the symptoms are visible and they just have to disappear. They basically go live in the woods, almost like a leper colony or something.
Right.
But some of them can pass. You know, sometimes the visibility of the disease might be something that's concealed by a shirt. And so they get to still kind of interact, go to school, live with their families, and keep it hidden. It feels a lot like, you know, I mean, now's a strange time to read a book about a disease like this.
Sure. Is the term allegory for just pregnancy in general? Because knowing that this potential is out there, these kids are still fucking without rubbers and stuff.
Right. Yeah. I thought about that as an adult in my mind. It's like, in some cases, they see the person's infected and they still go through with it. And I'm like, why would you do that? I guess I forget what it's like to be 18.
This page came to Pittsburgh and was a part of a traveling exhibition. I don't know what the exhibition was called, but we were lucky enough to get it here at Carnegie Mellon University. And I knew Charles Burns from Comic Book Confidential. His Big Baby story, he gave a little bit of a read-through in that documentary. So I knew his style, I knew his work, and I had a couple of the second volume issues of Raw before I got a hold of this thing, man. But to see that original, one of the things that came to mind immediately was like, this guy doesn't use, he's this good and he doesn't use whiteout.
Right. And this is sitting on top of an artist edition that has, I don't know, the first four issues or something reproduced and then some odds and ends. And it's exactly what you say. You know, you don't see whiteout. I don't know if you see it at all. Like, it's almost not a tool in his arsenal. I had the same response. I saw those original pages in that show and they killed me. You know, they were flawless, where usually the reason you shrink the artwork down is to tighten it up. It looked perfect, full size.
Yeah. And shouts to Susan Moore, Charles' partner, who does the great lettering in this comic that is totally congruent with the art style.
Yeah, I remembered the lettering as being a little more EC-like than it actually is, but it fits. It is perfect.
Yeah, nice, confident, bold line. I wonder if they work in assembly line method, and the letterer is tasked with rolling panel borders as well.
I wonder that too, because again, in the artist edition, you see it's all perfect.
Charles Burns' style is also one of these very rare styles where I'm happy to see him draw anything. The most mundane pedestrian scene looks freaking exquisite. But then when you get to something like this, a little head trip sequence, even more phenomenal.
Yeah, and so being a coming of age story in high school and kids having sex when they shouldn't, there's also a lot of drug use.
Yeah.
And you see it, I think, like some of these panels. This is a kid passing out, you know, dissecting that frog, and it's just too much for him, which is handled pretty well. But you'll see these drug trips. You'll see this kind of like flashback, dreamlike stages that happen a lot in this book. And he handles it perfectly. Like, the art style is perfectly suited. And it's just what you said. It displays his ability to draw everything from the mundane of sitting in a classroom to the psychedelia of taking LSD and, you know, having these bad trips and things. And he handles it all with the same kind of incredible style and flair.
He'll have these moments that are very sincere human moments. You know, these kids getting high, just talking shit, whatever. But then he'll never let you forget, man. It's a Charles Burns comic, so you're gonna happen upon stuff like this. You know, these weird totems that are on trees, and then there will be almost straight up romance comic kind of scenarios happening. But then a girl starts making out with a mouth that's built into a guy's chest because he has the bug. He'll never let you forget. It's a Charles Burns comic.
Giving away such a good moment. That's one of the more disturbing scenes in here. Those things, those like totem-like things on the that we'll see in the backgrounds of these woods, they were then in like Blair Witch Project. I remember seeing that movie and just being like, oh, it's such a lift from Black Hole. And there's a skin. So as you say, you know, probably one of the big indicators of a Charles Burns comic, there you go, a human skin that's been shed and it's stuck in the branches of a tree. And some people get this plague a lot worse than others.
Right.
So you get the really grotesque horror, like put the makeup on. This
You don't get to go to school looking like this, man.
No, that
you're gonna have a tough time.
You're in the woods if that's how the bug got you.
Yeah.
There are great moments too, as the students, they kind of just disappear, right? And
Right.
then the people who are still in school and still going to parties, they'll talk about him like he must have got the bug. You know, haven't seen him in 2 weeks. His family doesn't live at home anymore, that kind of thing. And whenever they encounter them occasionally in these woods where the kids party, they're not even recognizable sometimes. But, you know, to the person who's infected, they of course recognize their former classmates, you know, and they would love to have that connection again, but it's just too much for the uninfected. Really disturbing, that stuff.
Sure.
This is an Yeah, we could identify the Charles Burns scenes about every other page if we have them.
These great dream sequences. The first time I traveled abroad was to a festival in Denmark, and Klaus Burns and Where We're Out There, and they were talking about like the importance of dreams and how it corresponds with their comic pages. And you could see that each of these guys probably take something different away for that. Like Charles Burns is literally like depicting dream sequences. And I think what Klaus and Ware meant was you don't have to draw a perfect 67 Chevy. Like it can be the idea of a 67 Chevy that you put in the comic, and as long as it's consistent, like, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, that's a huge thing. That's been something for years. It took me to understand that, because you'd hear them say that stuff in interviews, and I agree with that 100%, but it's weird when you're the guy drawing it and it's like, oh, it's just not a good enough car.
Right. Here's our girl Chris, and as a storytelling device, she has this little chocolate chip on her mouth, man, so that like when she takes off her skin, you could see it on the little skin piece.
Yeah, it's a good detail. And she's one of the leads, I would say.
Yeah.
I think of her, and then there's a guy, Keith, the guy that passed out in the beginning. I feel like we follow their two arcs.
Yeah.
And they interweave a little bit here and there. They come together at different times. But I feel like those are the two primary characters.
Keith's the unibrow cat, right? Because she has a boyfriend that looks a lot like Keith, except he doesn't have the unibrow.
He has a little goatee.
Yeah, a little flavor saver.
It's interesting whenever you see Burns deviate from the kind of the brush inking, you know, like he'll do a few different variations, like a grass texture or something in the background, or a rock texture in the background. It's a little bit of a finer grade. And he does it really well where we're seeing like foliage in the background and it's a finer line.
Yeah.
And so that finer detail recedes. You know, we have a big, thick, bold black line in the foreground and in a lot of this art, but the background then kind of steps back from that.
When he does the holding line as white, which really, when you take a look at the artist edition, he's just filling in those blacks. Like that's not some kind of like white tech pen or anything like that. Before we put the camera on, we're talking about the luminosity of the characters, the way he inks this stuff, and every single panel, the style lends to making sure that we know full well what the focal point each panel is, because he sheds light quite literally on the characters' faces.
Yeah, great example of that right here.
See, this is the part where it's getting, you know, we have a spread of a romance comic. It's not going to last for long.
Yeah, you know what? That's a good thing to talk about. Charles Burns, if you follow him, if you read interviews or see his comic art stuff, huge influence of like say 50s comics,
Yeah.
romance and horror comics. Probably any kind of comics, but the romance comics, like he was one of the first guys, who I would really see embracing that whenever I didn't know much about romance comics. And you'll see it again and again in this comic. It's interesting what the ingredients are from that regard, because mid-90s, man, romance comics weren't, like I never saw them.
Right.
And now, you know, I think people have a greater appreciation and some of them are reprinted. But back then, totally secret. Look at these great, like, these abstractions.
Yeah. And, you know, this is a comic dealing with teenage sex, but it's tastefully done. This isn't a porno comic. There aren't porno sections to this, man. But still, keeping with the Charles Burns motif, this is a kind of a heartbreaking sequence, man, because they're both giving into their biological urges. The dude has something to tell her. You know, he wants to make her totally aware of what's going down with him. And she says, "I know." And he takes that as, well, you heard the rumors as well, man. You know, so you know what's going down. Pops it in her. And as she's writhing around with him, reveals the little mouth on his neck. And she's like, "What the fuck is that, man?" And this bug, man, this bug, it's like, it's a foregone conclusion. You fuck, you're getting it. See, this is total romance comic imagery right here.
100%.
After we've just seen this shit. And this little mouth, he's a motherfucker because he's independent.
Yes, he is.
And it's like he wakes up when the guy goes to sleep.
This is a great panel too, like the action, the action reaction shot, but is one face divided by the panel gutter.
Yeah, it makes me think of that. Was that book called Facetasm, the one that he did with Gary Panter?
He gets so much mileage out of a relatively limited vocabulary. And I don't mean limited, like he can't draw something or anything, but I mean, he has these, it's rigid panel borders or it's those wavy panel borders. Mm-hmm. It's often on a grid, but then when he varies from the grid, it's a real indicator of like something's wrong. The world's very shattered at that moment. The character's experiencing this off-kilter feeling. And it's so effective because it is a relatively simple ingredient list that he has. Man, he plays them all like a, you know, the greatest ever, but it's not overly complex what he's using. He's just doing it better than anyone else.
Right. Rereading the story, see, this is fairly early. It took him close to a decade to do those 12 issues. When I first read it, like, when you get the issues, you have to reread all previous issues. That's the way it would work for me, man. When a new Black Hole would come out, it's like, all right, read up, because it took a year for that last issue to come out. A year transpired. And I would read it as a whole. And checking this out, like having this book as a document unto itself, you see these textures here, like with the foliage and the weeds and stuff. Later on, it's clearly the same guy, but he gets even better, like, as the years go by. Like, when I was a kid, it all felt the same. It all felt like one unit, but it's just not the truth. Like, the end papers later on are so ornate, and the inking gets even tighter. It's ridiculous, because it starts off at such a high level. On top of the bug, on top of the romance scenarios, on top of the drug use, these poor kids who are out there in the woods, there are arms and legs and things like that that are being found around the woods that create this extra level of horror to our terror tale. Look, that's almost like Rick Griffin or something right there.
Yeah, I continue to be in awe anytime I flip through this book. It's very easy to get mesmerized in that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mentioned him having these few ingredients that he goes back to again and again, and you see it in the repetition of faces,
right,
and the scales and things like that. There was a manga, Dragonhead, and the first time I flipped through it before I read it, and it was the same deal where, like, certain faces and sizes would repeat, so it was almost this pattern of, like, recurring imagery. I get that out of Black Hole. You know, as you're flipping through, like, you'll see these kind of, like, a handful of, I don't know, sizes, scales of these faces, three-quarter views of these faces. It just becomes this very repetitive, almost filmic experience going through it.
He'll do this other thing.
Hands are a big thing. We see a lot of really well-drawn hands.
He'll do this other thing where the sort of giving into the Golden Age romance comic, like, aesthetic, with the captions, there will be a lot of show and tell, but it's kind of the writing part reinforcing his romance comic love. Like some of the panels I'm thinking of are like, you'll see little creatures in the background and the caption will call them out when it doesn't need to, but it just, it's the writing part that's giving into that romance comic vibe.
Yeah, a lot of the captioning is that first person accounts, which is the feelings.
Right.
Which, you know, definitely harkens back to a lot of the romance comics. This is great. They're going to get drugs. So, you know, think of this as your very typical 70s drug dealer house, blacklight posters, dark inside during the day. This whole art, you know, like whenever I got into doing like blacklight posters, this is the guy I'd think of because it has that luminous quality.
And you need that black for the other colors to pop.
It really nails that vibe in my mind. Like when I think of blacklight posters, it's this book.
You don't get to reach this kind of drawing ability if you don't freaking draw a lot, a whole lot, and do a lot of practice, man. So the setting the story in the 70s makes perfect sense because I think about just personally, my knowledge of pop culture ends at about 1994 because I invested everything into this, you know what
That's
I'm saying?
Interesting, right?
And when you have, like, you could see it now with, when you have, like, middle-aged people making young adult comics and are trying to be contemporary, it rings false. It's like when Kirby was doing Jimmy Olsen and he's, like, using hippie words and stuff. It rings false because you're lying. You've been indoors, you've been drawing, you've been living in your own world, and time has ceased outside. You're seeing kids with pants around their ass, and it's like, you know, Blade Runner or something, man. So it makes perfect sense to keep the time.
This is a big story moment. So this is Eliza, who's going to become a romantic interest for Keith, you know, the other lead in the comic. And I feel like that's a pretty good intro moment of him seeing her and reacting. I think he's high at this point and, you know, going to get beer or whatever and runs into her in the drug dealer kitchen.
Right.
And it's great. It's very effective. You see his shock. And of course, you know, is being high, he's even more like open to that weirdness. And then this is what you see is a half naked girl that has a tail.
It's a perfect thread too, because it's that classic thing of like, can't be with the one you love, so love the one you're with kind of thing. Because he, Keith is digging on Chris. Like he would very much rather be with her, but he'll settle for the girl with the tail.
Some nice characterization as she covers up and does like a little fun dance there.
Right.
Very playful.
Yeah. Yeah. Burns is cool because like, you know, she's super attractive except for like this one little quirk of a tail.
He does stuff that surprises me because this kind of absolutely mechanical, you know, precision in art, I would expect it to be stiff.
Right.
And somehow it's not stiff at all. Like, no. There's a lot of life in his characters.
When he does these straight edges, do you think that he's using the orange rapidograph?
I assume.
And this is such a great sequence. Like, he's following her to her bedroom, and he sees the tail wag, and he's like, I'm starting to get hard. Keeping up that Burns weirdness, man. This is awesome.
Yes. So she's an artist, and this is her, like, basement room in this drug dealer house full of the art that she makes. Super cool, and a chance to see like Burns' other styles. If you see like free shit, you know, as Zine he used to do. Yes, yeah, sketchbooks. You'll see that this is him drawing, much like Chris Ware's sketchbooks. When you see them, and it's like, oh, geez, Acme Novelty. He's choosing to draw in this style. Of course, Burns can draw with whatever tool you give him, and in a variety of styles. Some of it, I think, does look like a pen line.
Yeah,
but I don't know. If you look at the originals of these are pay stubs.
Uh-huh.
So he's playing with, you know, like. Hard I think contrast. They look exactly the way he wants them to look, so they may be photocopied, you know, to get the effect that he wants before he assembles that background.
That's super interesting, because, like, this is stuff probably just from his sketchbooks.
I assume, yeah. It's really fun. In a way, it's like you're in his brain in this room.
Right. And, like, he had a very, like, sort of healthy career doing those vinyl toys, like the Aurora model kit toys, but like it would be guys like this, except like with an eyeball face or something. When he was doing these single issues and like one would come out a year and you would see an interview with him or whatever, they would ask him like, how do you sort of keep your head above water doing this one issue? Like, we know what the royalties are with, you know, selling one unit of a $3 comic in 1995. How do you keep your head above water? And he would always say, like, you know, he has an illustration part of his career. And I really always wondered what that meant, because we seen the Iggy Pop cover. We saw the Altoids ads, right? But
I always think of the Crumb Entertainment Weekly piece.
Sure. Are there like American greeting cards out there or something that he has to like use some kind of fake style or like coloring book? Like opportunities were out there more plentifully than there are now for illustration, but still the bulk of those opportunities for an illustrator in the 90s, the like coloring book and like stuff like that would be akin to a photographer having to do like wedding photography to make their nut, you know.
He
like it
would
was out
do
there
a killer comic book
coloring book
coloring book. Yeah, he'd do a killer coloring book. Man, I can't believe he hasn't released one of those that I know of. He did one early in his career.
Self-published,
as like a,
yeah,
right, is an early project, but it's surprising to me that somebody hasn't capitalized on that. Thick black line would be perfect as a coloring book. He also, he used to, like, I used to get paper samples, you know, when I was a designer, and he worked with one of those big paper companies where, like, he would do a lot of stuff that would then go through their samples, you know, to show off, like, the different papers they had, how color would reproduce, and you can find those on eBay and stuff, so... Definitely, he was a celebrated illustrator, too. It's not like he was, you know, middle of the road scraping for jobs. I think he was a sought-after guy.
Look at his transition, right? Naked dude standing right there, right? Hot dog on a skewer. And, dude,
That's a veiny dog.
That's a Hills department store hot dog that was sitting on that little rounder thing, getting pimples and zits and all kinds of things. And here, and these are our guys out in the... out in the woods who have the bug, right? She's an interesting character to me because you never know, you don't know what she has. You don't know what's under her gear. She's with the crew. She has the bug, but we don't know.
That's funny.
What
it's
her malady
like,
is.
The one character in Breakfast Club who's in detention because she has nothing better to do.
Right.
It might be a normal girl who just gets a little more attention here at the fire than she does in school. Speaking of the fire and lighting, like, look at how well lit those faces are based on the idea of they're being lit by this fire. Incredible control of lighting.
Yeah, so much black on the page, man. So, and just the, like, that white just pops everything that's important in the panel.
His ability to do, like, white as an outline is something that it's really hard to do. Very few people do it and do it well.
When you see it at this level, like, that's what Jimmy's talking about, too, man, because...
And he does it a lot. You know, like, that's, part of that vocabulary.
Yeah, look at that.
Super effective.
You know, leaf textures, wood bark, dirt, grass. We see this guy as, like, kind of like a reoccurring character. Sort of always from, a back three-quarter view, man. Like, shot from a neutral position.
This is Dave. He is probably maybe a fourth lead type. He's kind of the leader of this group of people out in the woods. And so this guy must be... I don't know, an early person that was infected with it or somebody who has it worse, because he doesn't really hang out with the group, but a little bit. You know, like, he's around them, but stays kind of away from the actual, like, group going, hanging out and stuff.
Look at these textures, dude.
Yeah.
This is why the book would come out, the issues would come out 32 pages a year. And in Comic Art Magazine, it went through his process a little bit with, like, how he constructs. Their example was a cover image. And it's about 5 rounds of penciling before ink even hits the paper.
Yeah.
It's a lot of flipping the image and getting everything to get as tight as possible. He's one of the guys that like pencils extremely tightly and then adds extremely tight inking over top of it.
I think you have to if you're doing this level of detail.
Yeah.
It would be hard to make that up on the page. Especially without using whiteout. This is, I think, just another great composition. The reflection in the mirror as she's walking out of the bathroom. It's very deft drawing. Yeah, that's a good depiction of space, outside space. This is one that paused me because this is a harder thing to draw than you think.
Right.
You know, depicting that kind of school campus, it just makes sense to me. And I wouldn't draw it that way. So to see it done well is like, okay, yeah, that's... someone that knows what they're doing. And there are glimpses of some of that different texture on the ground.
See, Chris, she's not down with Keith because she's in love with this guy right here. And she has the bug, so he's helping her move in. Helping her move into the woods out there.
So this is... I mentioned how he'll start with these grids, and then as we get into, say, a drug or a drunken state, the grid starts to warp. And you see it even in the grid, like perfect six panel grid. And then you see it starting to slide. And by this point, it's just montage like.
Right.
And then slowly sort of coming back together.
First time her skin got ripped off. And that was a really cool part of the story, too. Like, everybody's about, she's at a party in the woods. Everybody's about to go skinny dipping. And, you know, she has the bravery to set it off. You know, she's the Frank the Tank, man. And she takes her gear off, and everybody just pauses, stares at her. And she's like, "What, man, you guys are wusses?" When you see her from the back, you see that her skin, like down her spine's all gnarly and kind of coming apart. And everybody in that moment immediately knows you got the bug.
And everybody but her. Like, she's aware that she's been exposed to it, but hasn't seen it. You know, she, I'm sure, wouldn't have gone skinny dipping in front of everyone exposing herself if she knew.
Yeah.
And so then everybody acts differently after that moment. And it's a surprise to her whenever it's revealed, like, and I guess we're going to see that probably.
When she pops into the water and she's kind of thinking about like how the tone changed. She just thinks that maybe she has like a little stain on her drawers. Then everybody sees that shit. I think we're coming to the quintessential Charles Burns romance comic spread. Should I turn the page, Jimmy?
You should, but it's great writing. You know, like that idea that she's exposed before she even really knows it. That's pretty good writing for a teen.
So. Yeah, yeah, but let's get back to her making out with his little neck mouth.
And it freaks him out?
yeah, because, you know, he's never had anybody do that.
That's another one of those great moments. I think a great writing moment. It's really smart, and it's sort of... It's a way to visually illustrate that idea of like early sexual contact and that experience of like being overwhelmed or whatever. He's like, whoa, whoa, this is weird. This is a cool issue. This is called Windowpane, which is the name of the LSD they're taking.
Yeah.
And so this whole chapter is these buddies, Keith and his buddies, taking acid and having this trip. And I mean, in the middle of this book, it's the perfect recipe for a bad trip.
Right. Also, by the way, when you see the use of the circle template, like that's Burns being able to use that ink compass. You know, when we have the circular panels like that, that's the ink compass. That's a hard freaking thing to use, man. You have to have a very clean rapidograph to use that.
Panels of characters watching TV and lit by the television. Pretty main, you know, one of the tropes, I think, in a lot of the Burns comics is TV. We talk about 50s comics, 50s television, probably equally influential there.
There it is, man.
Yes.
He's starting to feel it. Took that acid a couple pages ago, but it's finally starting to kick in.
Yeah, window shopping down the sidewalk and just being overwhelmed by the displays. Use of the page and panel layouts and even the lettering to just accentuate that.
Great character design. Now, Jimmy, people come to our videos, they know spoilers abound. They know we're going to be looking at every page. So can we blow the spot? Because this is like our villain of the comic. And the thing about the character design, and Burns will play it up more as we see him later, but part of his disease gives him this concerned-looking brow that makes him look really freaking innocent. And then when you see that he's the villain, it creates like cognitive dissonance to me in a way.
That's interesting. I thought you were going to go the other way because his mouth is so deformed. Like he's monstrous.
He's monstrous, but like watch when we
see his brow. I agree with that part. Yeah.
This is another thing about like, see, they'll revisit like the coastline, and this is Burns gravel texture in like, say, 1997 or something. Watch when we get to the end of the story and see what he does with that brush. See? Keep all of this in mind.
Also note, as you're watching at home, how little black there is on this page, relatively speaking. You know, it's a daylight scene and it feels like daylight.
Water's so hard.
Transition back into nighttime.
Oh yeah, that's right, man. The mouth, like when he goes to sleep, that little mouth wakes up.
Such a creepy design. His lettering, like all the title lettering, is so great.
Yeah, yeah. Once again, that's Susan Moore, his wife and partner.
And do you think she does the title lettering? Because it's integrated with the drawing. You know?
Well, I think she has something to do with it.
and again with the hands.
This is one of those crazy things too. Like when you take a look at it, you know, Frank Miller is going to use white paint to do all that. He's drawing all of these little tree branches and then coloring the black on the inside.
You see it in the artist edition. Mm-hmm. It feels like he's drawing it and seeing it.
Yeah.
And it looks perfect. It reminds me of like the Hellboy and Hell artist edition where like there's something about the size. Like when you see that original art size where it's like, it's a complete satisfying piece.
Yeah.
You know, it's shrunk down and reproduced here for us. But that original piece, like he has to be just, that's an artist response, you know, like a painter would be dealing with his canvas, I think.
Perfect 70s bedroom. We've got the Bob Dylan joint.
Yeah, all this stuff on the walls is always fun. Funny, too, how those posters are so, I don't know how many there were, but it seems like they're very common, right?
And right.
There's a big legendary poster company, and I think they made all their money off of, what's the model?
Farrah Fawcett.
Yes, the Farrah Fawcett poster that sold millions. So, you know, Bob Dylan, of course, the Jimi Hendrix we saw earlier in the drug dealer's place. I remember in college, there would be like poster people that would come through like the first week of, you know, you're back in college, and it was just posters, and they were the same posters. Like you probably could have bought any of those posters at that setup.
We got our guy, he's meeting Chris again in the woods for the first time. Got the innocent brow, the innocence of our guy. This is what he looked like before he caught the bug. And he's part of chess club, man. and then you wonder like, well, what kind of chicks did those guys get to see?
That's that moment too, where Chris is like, "Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't remember you."
Yeah,
it's such a perfect high school moment. For a while, this was talked about being made into a movie, and Neil Gaiman was like the name attached to adapt it.
Right.
I'm often surprised when stuff like this we don't have a movie of it. Because it's so well developed, you know, like that's a scene that would be in any teen movie, right? The kid has the crush on her for 8 years of sitting next to her and she doesn't know.
Yeah, I think it's, there's so many good moments. I think that it's hard to crack the code on this because it's such a, there's so much to this work. How do you get that into 90 minutes or the modern day movie, which is 2 hours and 90 minutes?
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, in this age of television shows, it feels like this would be very episodic too. You know, the chapters right. are so self-contained and they advance so much. So we're back to Eliza, the girl with the tail. He's back looking for drugs. You can see his evolution. He's got a haircut. He's cleaned up. He's got a job. He's grown up, coming of age. She is not looking as good.
Yes. This is around the point, too, where Burns' writing levels up because he's now playing with time in a lot of ways. I mean, he's going forward, he's going backward. One question, if we were to do a shoot interview with him, I would be curious to ask about the rigidity of the plot of the story. Did you have like bullet points for the forthcoming issues and then work on the writing sort of as it came up? Did you leave a lot of room? You knew what the ending was. Did you leave the middle to sort of play with? Because he's such a rigid artist. I don't know if you turn that off with the writer part, so I'm very curious about that. The stuff that is built in the beginning, sort of everything has its payoff, so it feels constructed. But, you know, that's a question to ask him.
Everybody, all these characters too, are very, I don't want to say self-absorbed, narcissistic. But they all have their own problems and they're all sort of, you know, they all dwell on them. Whenever they get a chance to talk, we're going to hear about what they're going through.
That's kids.
It is. Totally. Totally. It's perfect. Like even in one of the earlier chapters, when Keith is having his LSD trip, he ends up at that fire with all the infected people. He's complaining about his life. Right. It's like they're kicked out of their homes. Their whole life is in turmoil. He's the one complaining. Oh, you mentioned pornography at the beginning. We do see porn magazines, another one of those like 70s kind of perfect set dressing.
Yeah, and you could tell that's the 70s right there. Oh, yeah, right. See, we have our Charles Burns romance sequence, and we got to keep it Burnsian, man. So she's going to want that tail pulled. And what's going to happen? The fucker's coming off.
Another panel with a hand, and in the middle, the tail.
Kind of loses his stroke in the mix of it, man. But she's like, no, I like it. It's all good. Look at him fixating on it.
Of course.
And see, he's so, like, It's perfectly cut off.
I remember when I was a little kid and I'd catch lizards and the first time a tail broke off. And it was just like, what? Did I just kill this thing? It's very reminiscent of that. I definitely was looking at the end of that tail for a while.
Can we get to the action sequence? Because our girl Chris, she's got it. She has to leave, man. Her parents just don't understand. They're trying to keep a tight leash on her. So she works with Rick to escape, man, to get the hell out of there. She's going to live out there in the woods. And they're having an amazing romance. He still is going to school because he could hide his issues. But he visits her every day. And we have our most kind of melodramatic sequence. You know, I love you. I love you too. See you soon. And here's our little guy in the woods.
Our most deformed guy.
Yes.
That's a guy I think of as a Charles Burns drawing.
Sure.
The scraggly hairs on his head, the big brow.
One of the tropes also of the Burns face is the eyeballs are set very far apart. And when, you know, I saw this when I was a kid, like learning how to draw, and everybody, the teachers are always so rigid about, you know, five eyes wide, you know, one eye distance between eyeballs. And I'm like, but this rules, and it certainly doesn't abide by that.
Yeah, very small eyes. There's always room for that. This great is sequence vicious of getting the pipe in the face a couple times where it's like direction, direction, direction.
Right.
A lot of movement whenever he needs to bring it. And a really gross, man. That face is busted up.
Yeah, it is.
Super violent.
That's the last we see Rob. Yes. Rob is his name.
Yeah, and Chris has no idea it happened. All she knows is Rob hasn't been coming around.
Yeah, he just done disappeared.
So, of course, she's going to descend into depression, loneliness, isolation, not running out of food and supplies, dirty.
But Keith will save the day. This is Keith full-on simp mode, right? Like, he's got access to a house, and he hooks her up.
Yeah, he's house-sitting for family friends.
Yeah. Makes her sandwiches with the crusts cut off. I remember in school, this one dude was gaming on a girl, man. And he was talking to her. He's like, take your sip. He's like, what kind of lunch meat you like? They were going to go to picnic, Jimmy.
That's the funniest pickup line.
What kind of lunch meat you like? Oh, yeah, that's right. She the gun is important, and she stole it from her stepdad or something like that, man. Just in case, a little equalizer. You know, she's staying out there in the woods, and they're finding hands and legs all over the place, man. She ain't gonna be caught slipping.
This is another chapter that I think really showcases his writing ability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so easy to think, like, Charles Burns, great illustrator, amazing artist. But this book is really well written.
It is.
And in this moment, you know, I don't think I'm spoiling anything or stepping on anything. But essentially, this house, his plans for, I don't know, seducing Chris or at least maybe reconnecting with her go awry quickly. He's going to work during the days and stuff. And then when he comes back, it's like everybody's there.
Yeah.
Everybody from the fire circle has invaded this house and it quickly just falls apart and goes wrong.
Doesn't that look like a guy who would buy underage people beers?
That guy's great. He feels like a supporting character in Big Lebowski where it's like, you could spin off, let's follow him. Right. See where he's going. But it made me really mad, like, wow, this Chris character's terrible.
Right.
Was my takeaway. She kind of disappears. She, you know, flakes out, doesn't reciprocate at all, withdraws more into herself, or at least that's what you're led to believe. And then we're going to see what actually happens over the course of maybe, you know, two issues or something, because there's a lot more to the story than what we see from Keith's point of view. And that's great, man. It's amazing storytelling, because I know my feelings towards this character change and change again. So well done, storyteller.
I just saw Jackie Brown rewatch it for the first time in a long time. And Sam Jackson goes to his one girl's crib, man, to sort of hide out. And he's like, how do you live like this? That's some repugnant shit. And that's what I think when I see that.
And also the everybody I was friends with through like maybe 5 years of my life, you know, that college, post-college, all the dudes, that's what their places all look like.
Sure. And cars.
Yes.
If the crib looks like that, the car looks like that.
Yeah, so this is him back in the house he's supposed to be watching, and it is turning into that.
Buscemi would play this guy. Yeah, they have the heat turned up. You know, they stink.
Just complete every flat surface covered in garbage.
And whatever that is right there.
I was going to ask you what that is.
I think somebody's shitting in buckets.
It's a bad sign. He's out in the garage smoking joints before work. Boy, these people are going to come home and be mad.
Yeah, I think
real mad. Makes you not want to have anybody house sitting.
Who wants to anyhow, right?
This reminds me early, we see like the sun setting and then it becomes like there's weird rays coming off of it. It's pretty abstract. I pointed it out at the time, but this is the sperms going into the egg. It's exactly the same visual.
Yeah.
And now he's reconnected with Eliza.
Yeah,
she sees him at work and she looks good. She got out of the drug dealer's house. She's kind of looking healthy, eating better. As a very abusive household she was living in.
Yeah, she got her face rocked on at one of the parties.
A lot worse than that happened.
Yeah. Comes home, masacre. Masacre, as Ramones say.
Yes. Much worse than a mess, bunch of dead bodies.
Yeah. Look at that, man. Even has the powder burns. That's a close gunshot.
Yeah, he walked right up and did it. Close up of the black hole. There's that texture on your chicken leg.
Yeah, for sure. And look at these, like, mathematic bricks, totally measured out. Everyone's the same size.
They are, but then when you get to the writing on the chalkboard, it's much more organic, like a human hand behind it.
Yeah.
He's subtle with this kind of, like, the warm elements. It's very subtle where those are at, but they are part of that tool set that he's using.
That's true. You see the concerned brow?
Trying to buy a bucket of chicken.
Just getting dissed. Get the fuck out of here, you piece of shit, blah, blah, blah. And you have sympathy for him. Like, when you talk about, like, the ebbs and flows of how you feel about a character, you're on this dude's side.
Yeah, it's good. Again, good setup, because it's a couple of, you know, a page worth of him taking abuse from the normal kid behind him in line.
Right. See, even when he's being tough, man, he still has that innocent-looking brow. It's important.
And that sad face, the sad mouth.
Yeah, right there, right?
Spits in that dude's mouth to infect him.
Yeah. And get to answer the question, like, who's been making those totems? Of course, this is would be the guy making those totems. It's his Igor.
When do you know what's coming here, Ed? When you were reading this, were you like, oh boy?
Oh, yeah, right. Right.
Brings him some chicken. Brings his outcast buddy some chicken.
Yeah. When you see this, you know it's all down, because this is the guy that that rocked on our other cat and said he's doing it basically following orders.
Yeah, Dave, clearly the leader of these guys. And that's established throughout. You know, like, he reaches out to Chris when she's alone and tries to bring her to the fire. Maybe there are ulterior motives, probably.
Yeah.
But it's still the act of the guy who's kind of has that leadership role.
By the way, another trope of, like, say the 90s and before would be porno in the woods.
Woods porn, yep. You can find it. Is it in Playboy, Chester Brown's book? Does he find... I know he hides stuff in the woods, right?
Well, somebody has to hide it for us to find it.
Chester Brown.
You always wonder about the guy who hid that stuff.
Yeah, it's nice. This guy's enjoying himself, really enjoying the chicken. Nice warm moment.
And let's end it. Let's end that warm moment. Flashback. It's like making prints in the dirt.
Snow angels.
Yes. And then this is just recounting the events. What if we just leave this piece to people to read, man? What do you think, man?
The only piece that you're going to miss from this, there's two pieces that come towards the end.
Sure.
No, I'll just say it. It's not something we have to see. But we find out from Chris's point of view what happened this morning whenever Dave goes on his killing spree.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is she realizes that he has the gun.
Right.
It was missing when her campsite was ransacked. And she sees it with him. And so she locks the door and flees out the window and you know, tries to kind of, like, get back to life. And some of these people that are infected, the infections start to go away. It's almost like they age out of them. So, you know, that is kind of a possible hope that, you know, you could improve. But she goes back to that place on the beach that we saw earlier, her family campsite area, and connects with some old people that offer her some food and stuff. And so there's a little bit of hope from her. But she left as a way to, like, kind of protect, maybe not Keith as much as herself, but she had no choice, you know? So as a reader, I was mad at her that she was, like, blowing this guy off.
Right.
But then you find out she had to, or she would have been dead in that house. And then the other, you know, the other piece is that people are healing from this, whatever this infection was. It appears to be temporary, which is, you know, part of that coming of age thing, that transitioning, I guess, to adulthood.
Jimmy, look at that little lizard.
There's your display of, like, every texture in the book is now in his pen. I don't know if those are pen nibs that he's inking with at that point to get the really fine kind of texture, but it's all available to him now.
Yeah, let's look at some of that beach stuff, man.
This ending really strikes me as being a, you know, it's the end of high, it's like high school's horrible.
Right.
That whole time period, I think, is just horrible. And this is them getting out of it. It's the end, you know, it's graduating to adulthood. It's an incredible book, incredible read. Makes me want to look at stars on the beach. You know, it's so much darker. Where I live, it's you just can't see stars very well.
You really want these to be people from his high school yearbook, right?
You hope so. And these are what appeared in the end pages of the original 12 issues. So you would get one shot of them, you know, these 12.
Yeah, on one side. And then
the infected shot on the right. It is pretty fun. If he didn't pull those from his yearbook, he missed the chance.
I think so too, man. And then, of course, like, he had to do his own version.
Yes. Because every piece of this has to be perfect.
Yeah. Great book. Get it in any format you could find it.
It's early days of, like, graphic novels. You know, that's one of those terms that's thrown around and usually just means spine. But, I mean, this is a cohesive, incredibly ambitious story. And he lands it. You know, it's very well done. So when you think of the novel part of graphic novel in the traditional literary sense, this book delivers it.
Yeah, yeah. I just remembered, dude, I lost my very first Eisner against, in a category for best reprint graphic novel, against Black Hole. I think Black Hole, no. Here are the nominees. Black Hole, Ice Haven, Dan Klaus, the big red Acme novelty Pantheon book from Chris Ware, whatever Joe Sacco had out, I think maybe Safe Area Garajda, and my shit comic, man. And it made me think, you know, I was 21, just in comics for the first, you know, like my opening years. And I remember as a kid seeing the Eisner nominations every year in the back of, like, whatever Comics Journal or wherever you would see that, maybe Wizard, and always thinking, like, man, I sure would hate to be that one wild card. Because, like, every category had, like, one wild card shit comic. And they still kind of do. Like, one wild card shit comic that you know doesn't belong there, but somebody on that governing committee is friends with this person or however that works. The people I was working with, they hit me up to let us know that we were nominated for an Eisner. And I was like, against what? And they told me. And I didn't get out of bed for February of 2004. Or whenever that was, man. I do think it was a Chris Ware book that won. You know, that's the early days. You want to show off some of those end papers?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. One part of these trades, or of the comic book issues, were these elaborate end pages, usually of things like in the forest. But I don't know, there's a variety. Each one is its own thing. And a few of them are used, I think, in the book collection, but most of them are not.
Right.
And, you know, you think of 12 issues where the front and backs are different pieces. That's a lot of artwork to not, you know, to not show off somewhere.
Oh, man, Burns cheated on this one. It's the same image.
Is blown it really?
Blown up. Yeah, I'm looking at the little debris on this rock, and it's the same there. Charles, what are you thinking, man? So you can't tell him that stuff, because he'll get...
You know what? This one's the same, too. I bet you that one might be the same. That might be something that happened as he was going further into these. Oh, this one's the same. I thought each one was different front and back, but I guess not.
I guess in the early ones.
That was bad memory on my part.
It's a mandala
12,
effect.
It's still 12 impressive drawings, though. You know, like the two-page spreads. You gotta use these wherever you can. His black and white just looks different than everyone else's, right?
It does. But it's also that synthesis of comic book history, you know what I mean? Like the feathered line has always been there. It's just he's perfected it. When I first saw his ink line, it was the ink line that I wished Charles Paris really had with Dick Sprang, because it wasn't as tight as this. It's
pretty tight.
It was still fairly wobbly and loose compared to this.
By the way, who's referencing Charles Paris and Dick Sprang for inking reference. This one is different because there's a Snickers wrapper. Like somebody went through this area.
Yeah, this is the one that we all remember, man. Yeah, there's even like little loose ties and chicken bone.
And this is throwaway. You know, like these are end pages that aren't even reprinted.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Great book. So happy to revisit it. First Charles Burns on the Cartoonist Kayfabe channel in almost 2 years of producing this YouTube. We had to right a previous wrong, and what better time to talk about Black Hole than during October in the midst of COVID.
It's a great book to read right now, weirdly.
Or not, depending on where your mind is.
Fair enough.
Kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel, hit the bell, we'll notify you when new vids are available. Octobrion is in stores now on Comixology as well, so get it in whatever flavor you like. But if you see it in person, you got to scoop it up because it's going to be worth $700 this time next year. Patreon.com/EdPiskor. I'm serializing my Red Room comics for the early adopters. $3 will get you the complete archive.
You can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video. You can find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video.
Give them one more marching order and let's get the heck out of here, Jimmy.
Read more comics.